let's welcome in audio only. We are now going to go into the second part of our podcast, which is really reviewing the group as a whole, talking about what we think of each prospect, not reviewing the film. But if you didn't get to watch the film, go to YouTube, watch the film that Ray and I just reviewed. You could see the top seven prospects that we think exist at the defensive interior position. And now we're going to start to rank them and talk about what we think. And I think the conversation for me starts at number seven. And if you couldn't guess, if you watched the YouTube and you still couldn't guess who I have at number seven, I think it's kind of obvious that I have TJ Sant at number seven. This is the 21-year-old out of South Carolina. He's 6'4", 297 with 1,100 career snaps, 82.4 defensive grade, 77.1 run defensive grade, and 81.5 pass rushing grade. I do think that Sanders offers something in the pass rushing part of the game. But when you're talking about defensive interiors, teams tend to want those guys to be more effective as run defenders. And I saw that as missing. I saw him missing that needed strength to be truly impactful in the run game. I think he's a great, I think he's got great build, you know, and he's only 21 years old. So there is a chance that this guy still is growing and is still developing. And in 1 or 2 years, we're talking about him in a much different light. But when I'm talking about taking a defensive interior in the first round, I don't think that's the case for Sanders. I had him as a developmental third round pick, early third round pick. That's a guy that I would trust taking there because I do think it's an important position. And because it's such an important position, you want to take a risk on a guy like this. What do you think, Ray? I talked a lot about Sanders.
So I like Sanders, but have the same concerns that you do. The thing is, again, I'm upside guy. He has the upside there. He can be a bursty pass rusher. That was his highest graded aspect of his game for a reason. And he had a good Senior Bowl because of that athleticism that he was able to showcase in the pass rush. The thing about Sanders, and it applies to all these guys, really, but especially when you talk about someone like Kenneth Grant in particular. But the NFL, given the increase in usage of shell coverages from now on, it's not boxes are getting lighter. You have to stop the run with less defenders in the box moving forward, or than you had to 10 years ago, 15 years ago, etc. Sanders' game is not really conducive to that. He's, you know, he can shoot a gap, so to speak. That's a one gap type of player, and he's an athlete, but he can also get washed out. So you're playing with some fire there if you're utilizing him in a lighter box. But he can make some splash plays, so I like his athleticism, and I do think there's something there that could be developed. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if he becomes an Oso Odighizuwa type of player who was coming out initially, I think, was sub 300 or maybe not too far over. But a good frame with really good athleticism and just sort of pass rushing traits and ability, and then kind of develop the other aspects of his game where he's still primarily a pass rusher, but he's an overall impactful defensive interior player because the other parts of his game sort of developed and rounded into form to at least above replacement level in the run game. I think you can get there with TJ Sanders. So that's why I still have him in the second round. I would have him as a mid second round type of player because of that upside. But in this class, mid-second rounders could be getting pushed up to the late first, even just again because of the depth at the top or perhaps lack thereof. But I do like TJ Sanders. I'd like him more as defensive interior player than I did Eamon Wari as a safety, because to me, Eamon Wari was a sometimes player, whereas TJ Sanders, he's always going to bring it in the pass rush. The sometimes is just in one aspect of his game, which you know has to be developed and can be as you become a grown man in the NFL.
Where do you have him in this class?
I got to open the notes app here, the unofficial notes app. I have him. I also had him seventh, but that's because I really like our boy from Toledo, Alexander. But I like all these guys. So like seventh on this list is not bad because to me, he's above someone like Alfred Collins, even who I also really like. Just, we had to cut off the film at some point, at least for this episode. But Collins also is having a really good week at the combine, it seems, and is a good player. He's just kind of a different archetype. He's more of a strong run stop type of defender. So that's more of a flavor of ice cream thing. But no, I like Sanders quite a bit. So I have him mid-second round. And just because he's seventh doesn't mean, you know, it's not a knock.
Yeah, and I think just for context, right, we're talking about where we would have them in a typical draft. Where would we typically expect this person to go? I think when we're done reviewing the prospects, we might say, yeah, like I have him as a mid third, but you know, in this class, he's going to be an early second because that's how thin the class is. That might be the case, but we're going to get there eventually. Who did you have at number six?
I had Alexander, and for the most part, it's just what are the concerns, or not what are the concerns, but, you know, competition, right? I didn't see him go against Bama and then LSU and then, you know, Texas or whoever else, like some of these other guys. So that's why I kind of had him at sixth behind someone like Derek Harmon, for example. But I really like Alexander. He's big, he's powerful, but he's also agile, right? He's not necessarily elite in one aspect, like perhaps a Kenneth Grant is when it comes to, you know, strength and stopping the run, but he is very good seemingly at all of them. He's an easy mover at his size. Even when you just watch, perhaps part of it is the body types on the other side of the ball, but he just looks big, but moves better than everyone else near him. So again, I like everything about him. I like his toolbox. Might be a bit of an adjustment again, going from what the Mac to the NFL, but I don't have any sort of any strong weaknesses to Alexander's game. Just, you know, little things that everybody has to develop habits wise, but by and large, he moves well, he's strong, he's big, he's powerful, he's athletic. Sometimes he'll get in love with his sort of bull rush and strength and try to just push someone back in the pocket. And like I said, run down the middle instead of attacking a shoulder, for example, to be more effective in the pass rush. But you don't, that's, those are little things. I don't knock the guy's stock down too much because of that. It's just a matter of, yeah, he's got the tools coming from a small school, but I think there's enough there where you shouldn't be too concerned about it.
Okay, you have him at six. So just for the audio-only people, Darius Alexander from Toledo spent 5 years there, 6'4", 305 pounds, played over 2,000 snaps in the B-gap, 4.96 40 time at the combine, 90.1 defensive grade, 90.3 run defensive grade, and a 78 pass rushing grade. I saw him a little bit different than you. I liked him a little bit more. I had him at three in this group, which I know is high. I know is high. I really like his strength. I really like his explosiveness. I thought he had very good hands, right? When I'm talking about a prospect like this, playing for a smaller school, I will knock them if I see them winning with only just strength and athleticism. But when I see that you start to develop some of the moves and some of the hand battling skills at defensive interior, I'm going to say, okay, it's legit, right? Like, this isn't somebody that's just physically more gifted than everybody else. This is a guy that works on his craft and tries to develop himself. So I really like to see that. I think the competition was very easy. I think his strength and speed will not translate right away. It's going to take time. But he reminds me a lot of Johnny Newton from last year, who did struggle this year, right? Like, Johnny Newton was a guy out of Illinois that was physically more gifted than his competition. And on film, we saw him just blowing up plays, play after play after play. And we're like, wow, this guy's amazing. Like, he's going to be fantastic. And I think I even had Johnny Newton last year as a second round pick. And that's where he ends up going. And we did see him struggle this year. But when you're drafting a player like that, whether it's Johnny Newton or Darius Alexander, you're drafting him for 2 or 3 years down the road because you know that there's going to be that competition gap that he needs to kind of learn and fill. It's going to be a lot harder than some of the other guys. So I'm fully expecting that. And I have Darius Alexander as an early second round pick, but he is my defensive interior three. So that says kind of what I think of this group as a whole. We'll kind of get into that a little bit more. But my defensive interior number six was Derek Harmon. So really quick, again, for audio only people, Derek Harmon out of Oregon, 6'4", 310 pounds, did a great job at the combine. We went over that in audio only. Go in there and check that out. But 83.9 defensive grade, 80.5 run defensive grade, 86.3 pass rushing grade. So the numbers support that he is a phenomenal athlete and had a great season. And I think he sees things pre-play extremely, extremely well and trusts his teammates and has trust from his teammates to be a leader on that team. I think he wins really well on stunts, and I saw that, right? And he puts himself in very good positions consistently, but I never really saw him finish enough. I was disappointed with his strength to win one-on-one blocks, and I didn't know if he has the quickness to win in the other ways that are necessary for a defensive interior to play. So just for context, I had Darius Alexander as an early second round pick at three, and I have Derek Harmon at six, but I have him as a mid second round pick. So I don't think there's a huge gap in terms of when these guys will get taken in the draft. But he definitely lacked some of that elite skill that I expect. Although I think this is a guy that is going to get drafted more so as this is a guy that could be a leader on my defense. He's going to be consistent play in and play out. He's going to put himself in positions to win. And for those reasons, I really like him not getting drafted as this is a guy that's going to be a huge difference maker for my defense.
So I had Harmon at 4. And I like his tools. I like his length on the interior. There's something about Oregon where you watch their players and you seem more or less impressed than you thought you would be. And then they go to the NFL and they impress you more than you thought they would. I've seen that too many times now to throw a fit over Harmon, but I like his length. I think that was evident. He does have to disengage quite a bit more. And I just wonder if that's just something that gets solved with time. Maybe it's the strength program at Oregon. I don't know. And then they kind of go to the league. It's a bit of a shock to the system and they have more room to grow than others as a result. I'm not really sure because I like his athleticism. I like the way he moves, and that last bit of strength there to disengage wasn't consistent, but he's got the length and everything else to where, unless I think this guy is maxed out, I'm going to bet on the upside quite a bit. And to me, this defensive tackle class is almost like an exercise in grouping these guys, because to me, you have the more surefire guys, the true top guys up top, whether that's your top two or three or what have you. And then after that, there's different variations of upside. It's Alexander, he has upside, but the competition, you know, the adjustment to be made there. Walter Nolan, athleticism, former five-star, has some splash plays. He's got upside as well. Tyleek Williams is kind of like the only one to me where I really feel like what I see is exactly what I get. Whereas the others, there's either untapped potential or they're just the top guys. So it's kind of a weird dynamic in that respect. And so for me, I look at Harmon and I go, I'll bet on the upside there because there just aren't enough D tackles that have that frame and that athleticism and movement skills today that it just has to work. So to me, tape wise, perhaps he's sixth or seventh here, but when I kind of add in the upside and the just overall athleticism that he does display on tape, that's why I move him up to 4.
Who do you have at 5?
So I have Nolan at 5, and it's kind of a similar story to where it's athleticism, but like Nolan was that guy from day one, and I don't think he ever got there. So I know a lot of people love him and like, oh, he might go top 15. He has the splash plays, and then I just see a lot of just like, okay, and now you're going to run down the middle of this guy. You're going to run down the middle of this guy, but not do too much, or I'm going to get bored. And I got bored watching him. I got bored. He didn't excite me at all. I didn't go, whoa, let me rewind that. Like outside of the obvious plays where you did that, like everything else, like the other 8 out of 10 plays, I wasn't inspired. And when you have his pedigree, former 5-star, you're the guy, you come in with the greatest recruiting class ever, and then 3 years later, you're not the top guy. And I don't really see a huge I wasn't inspired by him. Even my headsets want to run away from it. Like, yeah, I'm out on this guy.
It's funny how different we see this class. Like, and that's why it's like there's a, a flavor of ice cream for every mouth. Like, it's the nice way of saying that, right? It's like we see this class so different. You have him at 5. I have him at 2. So I have him as my defensive interior 2. And for those at home, Walter Nolan out of Ole Miss, played 1 year at Ole Miss, 2 years at Texas A&M, 6'4", 296 pounds, didn't participate in the combine. And I do think there are some personality issues that I was hearing about that are getting discussed. 88.9 defensive grade, 91.6 run defensive grade, 75 pass rushing grade. Like, I saw a lot of good things about this guy, and I saw a lot of hunger, and that excited me. Like, this guy has a great speed strength combo, one of the better ones of this class, in my opinion. I thought he had the most advanced besides probably both of our number one guy, but he had the best hand battling skills besides that guy in this class. So number two in that. I thought he was hungry. I thought he was aggressive. I thought he carries his weight probably better than anybody else in this class. The dude just looks jacked up. Like, he looks like a menace, right? But I do agree that maybe he lacks a little bit of speed. Maybe he's not, you know, the strongest guy in this group, right? He's only 296 pounds. There might be some strength issues. And I also thought there was a lot of stunts in his plays and some guesswork. Like, he does guess. He chooses sides. He doesn't just necessarily, you know, read things perfectly every time. Sometimes he just guesses because he's trying to make a big play. But for me, what I saw in upside, and especially knowing how teams draft defensive interior players, they want that upside. This is a late first round pick for me. My number two defensive interior is a late first pick in a typical draft with Walter Nolan, the way that I saw him. So again, that tells you what I think of this class. But he's a guy that, of this group, I think he's the kind of guy that teams bet on. Byron Murphy was the guy last year that we both loved, right? I think he was both of our defensive interior one. Walter Nolan is a poor man's Byron Murphy, where, you know, similar size, tries to win with power and speed, has a decent arsenal of moves. Byron Murphy was a lot better, in my opinion. He had a next level speed that I don't think Walter Nolan does, but I do think they're built of the same cloth. And I do think that a team takes a chance on Nolan relatively early in this draft.
But okay, so I don't know if you still have him in front of you, but what were his measurements outside of height and weight? Like, what was the arm length and hand size? Do you have that?
I closed it. I could get it up pretty quick, though.
I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure that his length kind of measured a bit less than people anticipated, and same with hand size too. And so
I have it. So 32 and a half inch arms. So, I mean, longer than Mason Graham, and 9.5 inch hands, also bigger than Mason Graham.
Sure. But not better than Derek Harmon.
No. Yeah. Derek Harmon's were like legit.
Yeah. So if I'm looking at two athletic guys who supposedly have some upside and kind of need some coaching, so to speak, or what have you, I'm going to take the one with the plus length who moves just as well, the bigger hands, the bigger frame overall. That's who I'm going to take my chance on developing here, as opposed to the, I'm going to try to win with power and I have bad habits, but my arms are short and my hands aren't so big, so I don't have a lot of power behind my punch against other grown men in the NFL. They're in the same bucket for me, but no. I'm going to take the one with the better frame and athleticism.
I disagree with you so much, but that's okay, right? Like, we're allowed to disagree. I just think that there's a different level of it, right? There's a different, I'm an intensity guy. Like, I love to see intensity on the football field. And when I see that, that's a separator, right? And I saw that so much more with Walter Nolan, so much more. My number five was Tyleek Williams, 22-year-old out of Ohio State, spent 4 years there, 79.6 defensive grade, 88.6 run defensive grade, 60.5 pass rushing grade. So for me, Tyleek, good prospect, offers some positional flexibility. He's a big guy, can play over the nose, can play at the tackle. Had pretty good hand battling skills. I see that he's developing those. They weren't the best of the class, but he has them. They're there. And I actually really liked his first step. He typically had a really nice first step and beat guys flat-footed a lot of times because of that. I think he had good speed. I think he's very disciplined, which I like. And I think he's going to be a solid player in the NFL because of all of those things. I did see that he gets beat a lot in second efforts. I didn't see him finish well enough. A lot of times, it's about finishing plays. It's great to blow things up. It's great to create havoc, but can you actually do the things to make you a first round pick, which is the guys that really finish those kind of plays? I also thought, you know, for his size being 334 pounds, I don't know if I saw 334 pounds worth of strength there, which I thought was kind of interesting, but I do have him as that early to mid second round pick again in that group, in that cluster. So it is a prospect that I would take a chance on for sure.
When I watch Tyleek Williams, who's my three, it almost feels like if you're on the other end of Tyleek Williams, it's like you're trying to move the ball uphill. You're running the ball, you think you have a path, and like the center's ass just knocks into your hip because Tyleek Williams just kind of disrupted the line of scrimmage there and knocked you off your path, and it's just, you know, it's never clean. So he's the type of player that gets drafted into the NFL, goes wherever he goes. 3 years later, if that long, they got a really good defense and he might not be a superstar, but when you look closer, he's the one like kind of just pulling everything together as the glue guy there and really disrupting everything and allowing everyone else to sort of eat off of his plate. That's what I see with Tyleek Williams. And it's just like just an over and over, just a consistent disruption to where he's just like slowly pushing the offense downhill while that offense is just trying to move the ball. And it feels like they're going uphill, and it's because of this disruption that he's bringing to the line of scrimmage on the interior there. So for me, to me, he's a third because I think he's going to be very consistently at least good, if not very good.
You had him at three, you're saying?
Yeah, he's three for me.
Oh, wow. Okay. I like that. I like that. I mean, again, this is it's funny because you're typically like, give me the guy that I think has crazy upside and skills that are yet to be unlocked. But you're kind of going like, hey, this guy's like floor is really high. He's a really good football player. So I like him. And that's not usually like you.
Yeah, Cowboys give up like 220 rushing yards a game this past season. So you start to really appreciate some of the little things after that.
So it sounds like we only have two prospects left, Ray. It's the two Michigan guys. And I'm going to start with Kenneth Grant, 21-year-old out of Michigan. Played there for 3 years, 6'4", 331 pounds. Did the combine bench press 22 reps, 83.7 defensive grade, 87.5 run defensive grade, 75.3 pass rushing grade. There's a lot to like, right? When you watch the film with Grant, there's so much to like. This is a guy that is clearly able to do a multitude of different things, right? He can line up over center as a true A-gap nose guard. He could line up in the B-gap. He could line up in the C-gap. He did all of that. You showed that in the highlights that you shared. I think he has a better move arsenal than his size would suggest. I think his hand fighting skills are actually pretty good. And again, he's a big guy. They usually don't have those as developed as he does. I think he also wins way quicker than I would have expected a guy his size, which is awesome. I also think he's always looking to get to the ball wherever it is. There was a three play stretch specifically against USC that I watched. And I think you might've shown one or two of those clips, but on the first play, he gets a sack and you could tell he's revved up, right? He gets to the ball, gets a sack. He's revved up. Second play, bats down a pass. Next play, just bats down a pass. He's all excited, right? Third play, there's a run the opposite sideline and he chases it down and gets in on the tackle on the running back. So this is a guy that definitely has the motor, has the love of football. So I really like to see those things. I think from me, things that I saw too, though, I think his stance is a little bit sloppy. It's not great. He's not necessarily as powerful as a guy with that frame would suggest. Even the plays you showed where he wins, he's not necessarily driving people backwards every single rep where somebody 331 pounds, you might expect that, right? Even guys we watched on the Edge episode were doing that at times, right? Where every single rep, they're just blowing guys backwards. I didn't see that with Kenneth Grant. I thought that was interesting. Maybe he doesn't get the push that I'd expect. Maybe that's really what it is. Or is it kind of like a power struggle? I don't know. And maybe it does stem from, I thought his stance wasn't great. Maybe he just fundamentally isn't super developed yet, right? And maybe there's more to unlock there. A couple other things that I had noted, which I think are interesting, and I want it to be a conversation, right? Is the Michigan guys in general were pretty much like, thrown to the wolves play after play on the inside. Cause it's like, hey, there's two of you that are going to be first round picks. We can basically just rush three guys and you guys are going to get double teamed 60% of the time. Deal with it. Right. And I think that was part of it for me. It's like, you don't see enough wins because there's really not that many opportunities for them to win. So it's hard to evaluate for sure. So I really have to judge it on stance, you know, hand battling skills, speed, strength, push. And those are the things that with Kenneth Grant, I kind of went back and forth on. The only other thing I'll say before, because I want this to be conversational, is like, I might have saw more, again, two prospects I liked, but I might have seen more Mozzie Smith than I saw Tavondre Sweat in the kind of skill set that he has. And that concerns me a little bit where I did have Kenneth Grant, I think, DI4 for me. And it's because of that, right? It's like, Tavondre Sweat, I loved last year, and I thought that his power was extreme. I thought his ability to rush was extreme, given how big he was, and I think he showed that in the NFL this year. But Mozzie Smith, who struggled in the NFL because of, you know, I think the Cowboys probably messed that up more than anything, but it's kind of like, which skill set really is it? Is he really as impactful as I think a guy like Tavondre Sweat is? I had questions there.
Well, for you to compare anybody to Tavondre Sweat is unfair. And you, from your perspective. So let's just put that out there. I do think some of the inconsistencies you note about Kenneth Grant were to your point about Michigan was like, you're the backbone of our defense, have at it. And we'll just play coverage on the back end and go for it. And when you're 300 and I'm going to say 40 plus pounds, regardless of what he weighed at the combine, that's really tough to do play after play after play. and you will get washed down at times. Your technique will get sloppy and you will lose some of that burst. And one of the things I noticed was early on in a series is when Kenneth Grant, for example, would just freaking bring it. Like his best reps were first and second down, like right after a punt or something like that. And then it's, you know, he's full strength and he's just ready to go. And you just have this specimen at 100% just coming at you. Not to mention you're also dealing with Mason Graham across from him as well along the line of scrimmage there. So I think a lot of that was there was so much on their plate at Michigan that some of the lows to me were just fatigue. And you know, it gets like when you watch some of the Tennessee D linemen, for example, they subbed so much that they were just almost always at just 100%. They were playing like 27 snaps a game. It felt like if that, because they rotated so heavily and they were always fresh. And that was not the case this year in particular with Michigan, because they were just, they lost an ass load of depth from that national championship team in 2023. And they just relied more heavily on their anchors. And one of those anchors, Will Johnson, just didn't play much of the year. And so the defense was basically built around these two guys. Josiah Stewart was there as well. And they kind of just rolled with the punches from there. So a lot of times, if you go back to the 2023 tape on these guys, some of those reps are even better throughout the game. And it's because there's more of a rotation there. These guys are pretty fresh. So I think that's a lot of it too. But don't ever talk about Kenneth Grant like Mozzie Smith ever again. Just don't ever do that, because
Mozzie Smith as a prospect.
I
liked him too.
Prospect. Yeah.
But that's my point, is I did too. I really liked him as a prospect, but I saw things that gave me a little bit of pause, which said, okay, this isn't my DI1, it's my DI4. And I kind of see that a little bit here too. Where did you have Kenneth Grant?
Both Michigan guys are 1 and 2. And even so, it's like I'm fighting my nature a little bit, because to me, it's like, okay, this is the specimen of the class physically. Mm-hmm. And he's a good football player. It's not like he's a bad football player. So if he's the most impressive specimen to me, I mean, Harmon's got a good frame and everything else, but just the sheer power that he can possess and can provide for you, and he's a good football player, why is he not number one? And I struggle with that a bit, even though clearly if I didn't know their height, weight, whatever else, and I just looked at the tape, Mason Graham to me is the number one guy, but he's got some of the frame limitations. He's not a Quinnen Williams or a Derek Brown physically, or that level of just physical athletic specimen. How much do I knock him for that, when to me, he just brings it. The motor is there. The hand usage is there. The nuance to just do the subtle right thing. If you're going to pass rush, I'm not going to just strike you and run down the middle of you. I am going to attack one shoulder and just beat half of you, because it's easier to beat half a man than all the man. And I'm just going to do that consistently. I can't find the flaw that says, aha, that's why you're my DI2 now. I can't do that with Mason Graham. He's just there.
Let's talk about Mason Graham. Let's do it.
It
sounds like he's both of our number one, right? So, I mean, let's start there. First I'll give the intro, right? 21 years old, 6'3", 296 pounds. He was listed at 320, 296, 3 years at Michigan, 91.1 defensive grade, 92.6 run defensive grade, 81.1 pass rushing grade. So what I kind of had the aha moment today, this morning, knowing that we were getting on this call, was that I think if I had never heard of Mason Graham before and somebody put on the tape for me, I would have been super excited about Mason Graham. And I'd be sitting here going, that's my kind of guy. Like, that's a guy that plays football the way I like football being played. And I would have said, man, maybe I found something here. I think you could get this guy pick 20 to 25 and he's going to be a stud for your team and you're going to get a steal. But hearing what I've heard and hearing that Mason Graham is a top five pick, that's why you say, like, oh, you don't even like him. I do like him. I think he'd be a my guy kind of guy. But at the end of the day, people are talking about him as a top five pick. And you were asking yourself, like, what is the thing that is telling me he's not a top five pick or not top 10 pick or whatever it might be? And to me, it's like the intangibles just are so good, but the physicality is so uninspiring and like doesn't really show me that there's room to grow and there's stuff to be unlocked, that I'm like, is he actually just a really, really good football player, or is he like an all-pro football player? And to me, it's like, he's a really, really good football player that you want on the field every single down, but he's not a guy you build a defense around. And that's, I don't take somebody in the top 10 that I think I can't build a defense around. And that's a concern for me. Real quick, one other thing I'll say is I also felt that way a little bit about Aiden Hutchinson. Like, Aiden Hutchinson on film was a little uninspiring in college. And it's funny because both Michigan guys, like, you know, maybe it is, they just asked them to do a lot and they didn't because of that. It's like, hey, you're playing a ton of snaps, you're getting a ton of double teams, and we're putting you on an island. You're our best player. Go do what we expect the best player to do. But you don't see as much of the what Aiden Hutchinson was this year, right? Which is the development of a superstar. Mason Graham sees the field better than any of these guys. Like, he played it like a linebacker. It was weird. Like, how many defensive interior guys are running down guys across the field every play and making plays all over the place like a linebacker? Like, it was kind of weird. This guy sees the field incredible. He's nuanced. He has great skills. He's very fundamentally amazing. But is he athletically gifted to be a guy you build a defense around?
So he's not Quinnen Williams. All you're saying to me is he's not Quinnen Williams.
Are you taking a defensive interior top? I'm not, forget about this class. Are you taking a defensive interior in a class, in any class, top 10, that isn't Quinnen Williams? That isn't that type of player?
I mean, Aaron Donald wasn't physically Quinnen Williams. He was a different body type too. I mean, he was short armed. He didn't have a huge frame. I mean, you know, he wasn't a monster.
He won like a monster. On tape, you saw him win like a monster. I want to see guys win like monsters. And if I don't see it, I want to look at your athletic profile and say, you can be one. I don't see either of those for him.
So maybe Mason Graham, he's just a scalpel instead of a hammer. You know, he wins like so gracefully. It lulls you to sleep. Oh, he just attacked the outside shoulder, and next thing you know, he's in the ass of the quarterback. And you're like, how did that even happen? It didn't look amazing, but it was pretty amazing. And to me, that stuff translates to an extent because he's not relying on the brute strength that some others do and that physical advantage that they have. I mean, if he's a 10 out of 10 in being able to shoot his hands inside and win that battle right off the jump and then control the action, then he could do that in the pros. He'll do that to anybody because he's good at that. It's not that I'm stronger than you, so I'm winning. And now when I'm in the pros and I'm lined up against Tyler Smith on the interior, well, now I'm not stronger anymore. Now I got to go to something else, but I don't have these habits yet because I was the man for the last 3 years because I was just the bully. Now Mason Graham's not the bully. He's like this graceful bulldog that just like, he has this tenacity about him, but does everything so well consistently and technically that the adjustment that other linemen have isn't there. So yeah, if Kenneth Grant can have that same ability to just win with the hands inside right away, and now you got that just freaking jolt of lightning in his hands hitting you on the inside play after play after play, then yeah, that upside, that player is going to be better than 32 inch arms, smaller hands, and only 296 pounds of thunder hitting you on the inside. But to me, part of that is also just knack. It's a kinetic intelligence that you just innately have. Like, yes, it could be developed, but for the great ones, right? Ted Williams is a terrible hitting coach because to him, it's like, oh, the ball's coming. You just swing at it and it just goes. Like, that's almost like Mason Graham. Like, there's a guy in front of me. I just shoot him on the inside and then I work on one shoulder and disengage and make the play. Like, I don't understand how it's so hard for everybody else. That's almost the sense I get with Mason Graham, is like, he has a higher level of just understanding than everybody else, play after play after play, that it's like, that can't fail. And maybe that is an all pro. Maybe it is, because we've had better defensive interior players come into the league lately. It's still not a very deep group in the league.
It's good. It's a good group. Like that's kind of what the point I'm making is like,
it's good because you put Tavondre Sweat in like the top eight. That's why, because
yeah,
because
he's a top eight defensive interior. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. No, but honestly, I talked about Aiden Hutchinson, but Tyler Linderbaum is another really interesting example of a guy that is undersized, but technically is just a fantastic football player and has been fantastic in the pros, right? Every year now he's been what, top 3 to 5 center in the league. It's a much smaller position group, right? It's only, 32 guys that are playing that position. Whereas defensive interior, there's at least 64 plus, rotational guys can get up to 90 guys. And I think that's why I'm being a little bit harder on him, where Tyler Linderbaum has been great. And you obviously want that. If you can get a guy like that on your team, you want that. But at defensive interior, there's a lot of different guys in there, and you can kind of mix skill sets in a way where, okay, like you're saying, like Tennessee, like rotate guys in if they're not perfect for this one thing, put in a couple other guys that are, right? And you can do that and win that way. So I don't know if you necessarily need to take a risk on a guy with this skill set as early on, whereas center, maybe you would, because you only have one and you're only going to play one. So I think that's a little bit of what I'm feeling as well. And when I went through, right, like yesterday, I went on this app and did a little pick thing where I was looking at draft picks, and I was trying to predict who would be in each slot. And I'm saying to myself, I'm like, okay, Travis Hunter's going to go. Abdul Carter's going to go. I think the top two quarterbacks are going to go. And then I'm like, I think there's some corners that are like have really high upside that I might take above a Mason Graham. There's a couple receivers that are
corners. One of the non-Travis Hunter corners.
I think so. For me, I think so.
You got to name him. You got to name him. I'm going to put you on the spot now.
I think both of our number two corners could be in that conversation. I think Will Johnson, and I think your boy from Texas,
Jahdae Barron. But Jahdae Barron's not a physical specimen either.
I understand. But I think that if you were to present it and say, this is a guy that is going to step on the field and be a shutdown corner for me and, do all of these things really, really well, I think teams are going to look at that and say, it's a debate, right? I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's a debate between whether or not I go with this corner that I know that's going to be really good, or a defensive interior that's going to be good, right? It's at least a debate. And then I go to receiver and I say, there's going to be two or three receivers that the NFL loves and is going to want to put in this conversation, whether or not we do. We haven't gotten there yet, right? You have to think about tackle. There's going to be teams that need offensive linemen. Even if that position group isn't great, are there going to be a couple offensive tackles that go before a guy like this, right? And that's why I'm sitting here saying he's defensive interior one for me in what I think is a deep group, but not necessarily a great group. And I think I might say, like, I can mix some skill sets later on. That's just how I feel. But also, if I get a Tyler Linderbaum, if I end up with Aiden Hutchinson, if I end up with a guy like that, obviously that's a fantastic career and I'm not down on it. I think I would have felt a lot better if he measured in at, 6'4", 315, like his profile was for the last few months, but not getting that definitely concerns me.
Well, then he would be a Quinnen Williams, but that's the thing.
But that's what he was listed at. That's what people thought he was.
But look at last year's. Let's just go, because I think overall premise, sure, to me, in a quote unquote normal top of the draft class, perhaps Mason Graham is like a pick 8 or something, or 9. Maybe you have him a bit lower than that, but maybe in this class, taking out the obvious bump that quarterbacks get, like position, to me, he's like position player 3 or 4. If you look at last year's class, let's just look at the back half of the top 10. Malik Nabers to the Giants, J.C. Latham to the Titans, Penix to the Falcons, that's a quarterback, Roma Dunze to the Bears, McCarthy to the Vikings. So let's take out two quarterbacks and let's just put in the next two position players, because quarterbacks are, kind of their own thing, right? The next two position players were Olufashinu to the Jets at 11 and Brock Bowers to the Raiders at 13. To me, Mason Graham as a pure position player is better than Latham and Adunze, and probably Fashanu too. And Brock Bowers might be the only one in that group to me that has the argument that I'm as good or better at what I do than he is at what he does. And so maybe you're being too hard on him. Maybe that is all adding up to a top seven or eight guy.
I know I'm being too hard on him. But when I watch the film, right, like all I'm hearing is that he is what you're saying, which is an elite prospect that should be held at the top of every draft. But when I watched the film, I was like, I want Byron Murphy over this guy. Like, and again, I'm probably on an island there, but Byron Murphy, I think, was pick 15 last year. So if I want Byron Murphy and he's pick 15, I have Mason Graham as pick 20, right? And that group you just said, I think Rome is the only guy I say I know I would have wanted over Rome. Latham, it would have been maybe a question. I think I had Latham high too, but I didn't have him that high. But I would have had Murphy. I would have had Bowers. And Bowers is in this conversation too, as a guy that I was a little concerned about. I was concerned about his size. I'm concerned about how it translates in the NFL. And he looked fantastic, right?
Yeah.
He's another, I didn't want to just name white guys. I thought that would have been a little weird, but it's like Hutchinson, Linderbaum, Bowers, Mason Graham. And maybe I should recognize my own trends and like, hey, guys that are really good, don't just knock them because they're smaller than expectation and don't have elite athleticism.
But look, just because the Colts and the Vikings don't know how to draft, and they took Latu and freaking JJ McCarthy and pushed down a very good player to 15, doesn't mean that now Mason Graham needs to be in the middle or back end of the first. Teams don't know how to draft. That's what I say all the time. So
would I have taken Tavondre Sweat over him though? I don't know. That's like in my mind, that's like where, when I start to say, I'm like, that's probably in my rankings when I talk about all 22 era, which I do a lot, probably too often. It's probably like, that's where the debate is between those two guys. And it's like Tavondre Sweat was awesome this year. So it's not, I'm not saying he's a bad football player. He's a very good football player, but is he an elite level? Is he Quinnen Williams? Is he that level of prospect? No, not for
one me. One other thing I'll say though, I think if Michigan's offense could complete a forward pass this past season, and opposing offenses were legitimately threatened enough to be uncomfortable, the good ones, right? Mm-hmm. To have to force the issue at times, which in most even games offenses do. And that's when great players step up and make a difference, because you can't just do everything as if it's on the whiteboard if, you know, you're facing some stressors throughout the course of a game. I think we would have seen more game-wrecking type plays from both, from Graham and Grant. I think it would have been a little crystal clear about Graham's overall impact in that regard, but that didn't happen. They were a very poor team because of the offensive side of the ball. So they went, what, 8-5 if you include the bowl game. I think that's a part of it too, but sounds like overall very good football player, not a great physical specimen next level to. Sounds like you have some more concerns about, well, in that case, does it cap his upside in the NFL? Maybe more so than I do.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, like seeing him play like a linebacker and just making tackles all over the field, like it's kind of like the Bowers thing last year. It's like, I was concerned about Bowers, yet he's making all these ridiculous plays that look fantastic. So like maybe the upside is really what it is. Right. And like, I'm willing to admit that with Graham is like, I see that part of the upside. That's so insane. And so like, huge for whatever team drafts him. But when we're talking about like, will he ever be defensive interior one in the NFL? That like Abdul Carter, I think that could potentially happen for him. Travis Hunter, I think that could potentially happen for him. You know, quarterbacks are going to get taken early. But like, do I think Mason Graham has that potential? I don't. And I'll leave it at that. But he's a great football player.
Boy, if he's defensive interior four for 10 years though.
Like Tyler Linderbaum might be, right?
Yeah,
like Tyler exactly. Linderbaum might be. Aiden Hutchinson might be edge four for the rest of his career, like if he comes back healthy. It's like I get it. But okay, we've gone on long enough, I think. What position are we doing, linebacker next? Your favorite?
I think we have to. Yeah, I think we're forced to. I don't think we're gonna have seven names though, so it might be a bit of a quicker episode than today was.
Yeah,
but yeah. I think linebacker we do wrap it up, right?
I think we do linebacker, and then we do like I think we do a quick linebacker, like you're saying, like maybe we pick five guys and do linebacker, and then I think what we do is we do a defensive, just quick, like 15 minute episode. I'm saying that, I know I'm lying. We're at an hour and 24 minute, 15 minute episode where we say, this is how I see the defense ranked right now. Who would I pick first? for a second, maybe like we do like 1 through 15 or something. I think that'd be a kind of cool thing. Way to wrap up defense and then move on to the offensive side. But everybody, thank you for tuning in. If you haven't yet, give us a follow on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and X at @all22_PFF. And give us a review wherever you watch or listen to your podcast. Have a great day.